This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the January 8th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital, back here in beautiful New York City in the shadow of lovely Grand Central Station.
And the Chrysler Building.
And all these, it's New York City. They're everywhere. To my right, Mike Hogan, who has just been the MVP of the podcast for the last, 6 months, holding down the fort, well, keeping things moving and grooving.
Well, you know, as Woody Allen says, 90% of success is showing up. So if that's what constitutes being an MVP.
By that criteria. compared to me gallivanting, Bernier gallivanting, I mean, I guess you could say you beat a week for it.
Yeah, perhaps. I'll take it.
The form might come into question. But we're back for a new year of action here on the show. Going to be a little, some changes, some things the same, but you can typically, I think, rely on us showing up about two times a week with some amounts of guests. Matt is going to be joining us on a semi-regular basis, probably mostly on the Friday shows to do some preview work. At least that's our hope. Well, he hasn't really even committed to semi-regular, but
consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, but he will be here for sure, we hope, next week when we're going to do an Eclipse Awards preview show. We're actually going to let folks inside the kimono, if you will, of our Eclipse Award voting that the NTRA puts on every year. Should be some interesting discussions to come out of that.
Yeah.
My one little tease is at least one of my top selections wasn't even a finalist. So,
mine too.
Should be some mine good too. Stuff to yammer about. Yeah. We're hoping Matt will join us for that one.
I mean, there are really four, maybe five categories that you can discuss deeply.
True.
The
Most of them are going to be like,
all right, beholder. Yeah. Yep. Let's move on.
If you didn't vote for this, you probably shouldn't have a ballot. Let's continue.
Or, you know, I guess the discussion is who did you put under American Pharoah,
right,
the three-year-old male. You know,
but it's true. I'd rather talk about the contentious ones than parse who should be. I found that difficult in some of them to put it. When you're doing the voting, you have to put three choices.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, it's so irrelevant to me who's third. It was like hard to summon the brain power to make the call.
It's completely irrelevant. And let's actually take a second to talk about the voting, because I think some people have been unclear as to what it means to be a finalist. The way they and the finalists are not... The voting is done.
Yes.
The finalists are not like, here is your final ballot, pick from these three.
Right.
The voting is over. You know, so I heard some people say on Twitter, oh, you know, it's crazy that Carolina isn't even on the ballot. Well, she was on the ballot.
She
just did not get enough first place votes to finish in the top three. So the way it is it's the top three of first place votes only. So if you voted, say, I'm a Chatterbox for first, it didn't matter if you put Carolina for second, I'm a Chatterbox got 1 point for you, you know, and then you move on. And
that's interesting. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, that except in cases like American Pharoah, where you have to imagine it's going to be a close four unanimous, then they go to the second and thirds, but they only go to the second and thirds if it's a tie-break situation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's my understanding. So,
well, the other big business that the NTRA is involved in, of course, is the National Handicapping Championship, the granddaddy of handicapping contests that's going to be occurring in, what is it now? Gosh, just a little over 2 weeks' time, January 28th through 30th at Treasure Island in Las Vegas. Is that 3 weeks still?
Okay,
I thought we were the end of this week, so maybe it was down to two. But $2.5 million, $750 to the winner. One special player playing for $2.75 million. That's NHC Tour winner and friend of the podcast, Jonathan Kinchin. Jonathan, hello if you're listening.
And if you're not... Why not?
Yeah, you should at least be downloading. And then there's other NHC Tour news as well, beyond Jonathan getting first. Eric Moomy, last year's Tour winner, managed to somewhat desperately hold on to his second spot over the weekend. And I say somewhat desperately because Ryan Flanders, who was close to the top of the Tour leaderboard for almost all of the year, had three really good performances over the weekend at the three different Surfside contests. He had a second on Friday, a second on Saturday, and a third on Sunday. And had any of those been a first instead of a second or a third, pretty sure by my math, he would have finished second ahead of Eric. But Eric ends up holding on, which is a pretty impressive thing, to win it 1 year and come back and run second the following year. Now, the top 20 players on the tour are going to be playing in a contest within a contest at the NHC. Going to be one of the most, I think I'm the happiest about this of anybody, just because it's going to be so fun to cover these top 20 players who I've had the pleasure of covering all year in this little contest among themselves. They're playing for $25,000 and a berth to next year's NHC. So that's going to be fun. I have an article up on DRF.com detailing a little bit more about the top 20 contest. And then the other big news that I'm just now feeling comfortable calling official, though it might technically not be official for another day, but I got to figure anybody who had a problem with their score would have come forward by now. The top 150 players on the tour who hadn't already directly qualified for the NHC get in via tour points. It's this sort of back door that was created a couple of years ago that I think is fantastic because it rewards consistent play throughout the year as opposed to just having a miracle day. Some people say, well, oh, aren't they diluting the pool by allowing these players in the top 150 an automatic berth? And the answer is no, because by having this sort of back door out there, it encourages players to keep playing and to play more often. Mm-hmm. So when you're playing more often, you're feeding the prize pool, you're feeding the overall purse of the NHC, and in this way, the top 150 pays for itself. And now the top 150, this isn't also Rans. This is some of the better players, of course, because they've had to have, in most cases, six good results throughout the year. The tour rules allow you to use your best six scores, at least one of which must come in an on-site event. So when I'm looking over that list, I'm seeing one of the most successful players in NHC history, Ken Seaman. Ken has finished in the top 15 at the NHC three separate times. He's going to be there because of the tour. Michael Baychuk, the 2012 winner. He's been a guest on the show multiple times. Michael is going to be there because of the tour. And another former champion, Brian Troop, who last year made a run at becoming the first two-time winner. He made the final table again last year after winning the NHC in 2010. He's in because of tour points. So here's my little wise guy, my little wise guy move that I pulled the other week. We were talking about the betting for the NHC.
The future wager, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Treasure Island allows you to bet on who is going to win. Mm-hmm. And there was discussion that there was no value on the board even at twice the price. And I objected to that and said, well, I could think of one bet I wouldn't mind at 6-1, twice what the price is going to be. And Tommy guys in the top 20. He had a good result the last weekend to vault himself in there. Gave Kinchin a real run for his money on the tour as well. Tommy was on the other side of the argument. So we made a bet. Mm-hmm. I have to put up 100 jelly beans.
Okay.
And he's going to give me 600 jelly beans should somebody from the field win the NHC. I think I've got really good value and a pretty nice route there. And I've got a real sweet tooth, so I'm looking forward to those jelly beans. Last year, it was five of the top 10 at the final table, all qualified off the tour.
Including Mr. Kinchin, right?
No. Kinchin, he had won two entries straight in, but I think you're thinking of John O'Neill.
I am thinking of John. You're right.
The overall winner.
The winner. Right.
Exactly. So that was cool. A couple other shout-outs. We have a podcast listener, I believe, got in through the top 150.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Damian Sasso and his wife, his wife is the one that qualified, Jennifer Prince, was, 55th, I think, and one of the top 10 qualifiers via tour points, so they'll be there again this year.
That's fantastic. Yeah. They're nice people and always
great
nice
people
to interact with them on Twitter, and both real fans of the game, and they do the work. I've talked to them about handicapping.
Oh, yeah.
They both know their stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's appropriate, I think, that she was the one to get in by the tour because he's confided in me that she's the real handicapper and he just rides the coattails. So there you go.
Yeah, he's the data guy and she's the more traditional handicapper of the bunch.
That's excellent. That's a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like the sound of that very much. So that's what's going on in the NHC Tour. Just wanted to give a little bit of an update for that. I'll be out in Vegas. You'll be here holding down the fort?
Probably. We'll see.
You're trying to get there?
No, I don't know. Nobody has officially come out and asked me, and my schedule is pretty tough. I could maybe try and get there for a day, but I don't know how it works.
You did make it last year, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
And that was that blizzard and all that craziness. So your wife might not let you.
It was pretty dire. Well, you know, she was on vacation that week, so it was a little easier for her, you know, but her schedule's pretty crazy. And it was while I was gone, I think we had blizzards and ear infections and
all that fun stuff.
All this, Yeah.
So. Matt Bernier is going to be there for sure. I'm sure Mike Watchmaker will be there.
Yes.
I think Watch is one of the few people who's been to everyone.
And he's one of the ones, along with Eric Wing and I believe Ken Kirchner, that select the race.
Actually, Tony Neville, the sports book director at TI, is on that panel. Kenny is not involved in that, but the other two guys are. I actually got to sit in on that meeting last year.
That's right.
I'll actually dig up that article and tweet it.
It was a great article.
Thank you. We'll do something in the newsletter when I got to be a fly on the wall as they went through and decided what the mandatory races were going to be. Eric, of course, hosts the event every year, so we'll definitely have some fun with him out there. Not sure what we're doing for the shows. I have a grand vision that will probably not happen, but I'm going to push for it and see if we can make it happen. But we will definitely be doing something, obviously, for the show, and we're going to have tons of coverage on DRF Live of the event. That was a pretty big hit last year.
Was.
People enjoyed it,
was fun.
And we'll be back out there with a team trying to nail down what will hopefully be the biggest NHC in history. That's the hope, anyway.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put you on the spot. You
Please.
May or may not know the answer, and it's okay if you don't. Have they determined which tracks are in play this year for
it? Yeah, it's the same every year.
It is, okay.
So do I know them off the top of my head?
No,
then becomes
no,
the question.
That's fine. I was just curious. I know last year they didn't have Laurel, for instance. Was curious if Laurel was going to be... Personally, I've been... Looking at Laurel a little late.
That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, part of the problem is with it moving. The NHC has moved.
Yeah.
It's no longer a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So Thursday, you have some tracks that aren't running.
Right.
So that's going to be a factor for folks who are doing their preliminary work for the
right.
NHC. Need to keep that in mind. I wish I had it off the top of my head. I could probably fake it, but I don't want to fumble with my words. It's easy enough to find.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if it changed each year, but if it stays the same, then yeah.
It stays the same, with the big difference this year being somebody doesn't run on Thursday.
Mm.
And then, of course, it's because of that time of year. You always have to look at the potential for cancellations and other difficulties involving the weather, as we learned last year when there was basically no New York in the tournament. And I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get out on the red eye on Sunday night so my wife wouldn't divorce me.
Right. All right. Well,
maybe I have a segue. Speaking of my wife, we almost had to cancel the show today.
Uh-oh.
Because I had diligently begun the process.
I could have talked to myself.
I diligently begun the process of marking up the PPs last night.
Yeah.
And I had, I guess, haphazardly left them on the kitchen table. And so as I'm getting ready to come to the show today, I'm looking around for my PPs, and they're nowhere. I finally get the bright idea. I put two and two together. Susan was around cleaning last night, and I had to fish through the recycling and the egg cartons and the empty bottles of wine, and they're at the very bottom of the bin. Here they are.
I'm telling you, man, that's why you got to go digital. You got to go digital.
It's the best case yet for going digital.
I mean, come on. That's what I do. I'll put my notes on my phone
I did take a step in the direction.
Yeah.
I downloaded, I guess we shouldn't plug a specific one because there's so many, but I downloaded a certain PDF reader allows you to make marks.
Right. Yeah.
So
there are a number of good ones.
Yeah, so I can theoretically... And I have that Samsung tablet that I found lying around the DRF offices a few months ago. So that would be the kind of thing that maybe I could do it on.
Why not?
I'm curious there. Yeah, folks, if you have, I'll put a plea to the audience. If you have any thoughts about joining the 21st century and going digital, is this something I should be doing, or should I continue to be a nice Neanderthal with my paper PPs? I want to know your opinions out there.
Well, I will say yes. I will start with the first opinion for a number of reasons. First, you save money on paper. You save money on ink. Okay?
Yes.
You also save the environment. I mean, granted, before I lived in New York for the last 2.5 years, I lived in Oregon for 20 years. They have composting more regularly than they have garbage.
Right.
So, you know.
My neighborhood, Park Slope, just entered a composting pilot program, I'm proud to say. So, see, I'm saving that way. And you can recycle the paper, to be fair.
You can, but it's better if you don't have to do it in the first place. And, you know,
it's a fair point.
You save some money.
How about from a handicapping point of view? What advantages do you see?
Well, from a handicapping point of view, I'm not moving from a screen where I'm looking at replays and looking at trainer patterns and doing all that sort of stuff. I might have a separate screen up, or I'm looking at my phone. I don't have to fish out paper, flip through another page. You know, I'm not trying to figure out my
Your tablet is easier to keep track of.
Yeah, I mean, or my phone even. You know, I'm always going everywhere with my phone, so I'm not going to.
So you'll do it. You can handicap on your phone?
No. I would put my notes on my phone. I'd bring up the notes and say, okay, you know, if there's a comment, like for instance, the nice thing, and again, of course, I'm able to walk into the DRF offices and grab tomorrow's paper form and jot my notes here. So the podcast I'm looking at in action.
Many advantages of working here. That's at the top of the list.
Right. You know, and Mr. Wing, you mentioned he'll always, you know, if I run into him in the DRF kitchen, can I buy you a paper?
Well, this is a good impression.
This one's on me.
The subtle head motion is so dead on. It's worth going to YouTube and looking up the video of this to see Mike Cohen's dead on impression of the wingman there.
Yeah. So if I didn't have access to the actual physical paper form, I might very well be writing notes on my screen.
I can't get my mind around it. I like having the paper rather than having to have. I always have multi screens up anyway, so rather than have another screen, I don't know. There's something it's just me being a Neanderthal, and it's hard. But it's funny you mentioned
habits are hard to change.
The paper, getting the physical paper here. That reminds me of how I used to invent excuses before I worked here. I would invent excuses to come see friends here, whether it was Mandy Minger or Dean Kepler, who worked in DRF Press for many years. Invent excuses to come in just so they could hand me, you know, a couple of days worth of forms. It's nice to not have to do that anymore.
Well, it's like, you know, Charlie, my cube mate, will go up to Saratoga every year. And if he takes the Friday off and then goes up on Saturday, or if he goes up on a weekday, like, he makes sure that he's there the day before to get the paper so that he's not having to spend.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
Charlie produced this fun webinar that we did yesterday.
He did, yeah.
Which was, I suppose it's a little dated now, but if folks want to go and take a look at how we, you and me and Brad Free, use Formulator, it might be worth a look at the archive. It was actually very well attended. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed at the number of people who showed up to watch us. 250 people showed up to watch us go through the card at Santa Anita. There were a number of good questions that we didn't have time to get to.
Yeah.
And one of them in particular I thought was worth addressing because it's something I've heard before. For all I know, I heard it before from the same person, but it's something that I think I might have heard more than once at this point. And it's I was going through the charts feature in Formulator to look at a particular day's racing surface and talk about how you can use the Formulator charts feature to ascertain a bias. You can toggle to comments, and you sort of see there are some days. The specific example was at Los Al in their recently concluded thoroughbred meet, where there were certain days where all the winners came from the three path and four path, or almost all the horses in the exacta came from being wide. So, and the question, I don't know if the person was being snarky or sincere. I'm going to be an optimist and say they were being sincere. They said, rather than have the users do this work, why not have a rating in the daily racing form that sort of tells you what the bias was? And my answer to that question is that, first and foremost, bias is one of the most subjective areas of handicapping. It's not something that you can easily quantify. And in that sense, I think it's just sort of better off, not unlike trip handicapping, to let that be one of the subjective things, a way that somebody can go through and get an edge. And then the other thing I mentioned was if you're dying to get some sort of quantification of bias, there is a terrific product that works very well with Formulator that we've talked about on the show a million times, racingflow.com, which does a great job of numerically representing whether it was front runners or closers who were favored. Now, I would argue that in addition to that, it's still helpful to do your own subjective work and get a sense of if the inside or outside was maybe better at a certain part of the track. But those flow numbers can point you to a number of situations, including the situation that we talked about, the Los Al example that we gave in the webinar, it can sort of cut out some of the work for you. And I just love it because you can it uploads through the notes in Formulator and just appears in the lines of the PP. So that's my answer to that question from that person.
I'll chime in with a couple notes. One of the things, and I'll tout another webinar that we did recently, which was the DRF Plus webinar. If you haven't seen that, you can go to any of see any of these webinars at drf.com/YouTube. But one of the features of DRF Plus, so anybody that has a Formulator or Classic plan of five cards or more, automatically gets DRF Plus. So if you have that, you have access to the winner's books. And the winner's books allow you to see all of the races and the winners at a particular track over the past year. And in there, it marks whether a horse is considered a closer, a mid-pack, or a front-runner, or a pace horse. So pace is within two lengths of the lead, mid-pack is, I think, 2 to 5 lengths early, and then closer is five or more lengths off the lead. You can just go through and quickly look and see, oh, look, all of the horses were forwardly placed.
Yeah, I used that recently. You know, every time the Aqueduct Inner opens,
yeah,
there's a lot of talk of how it's all inside speed every day. And when we did, right after we did that webinar, I was playing around with the winner's book, mm-hmm. and I took it to another level and you can actually copy and paste it into a spreadsheet,
right,
and sort of sort the data
yep.
that way.
Yep.
And when you look at it that way, you see that that's just an old canard.
Right.
It's not actually, maybe it was true once, but it isn't true now.
Well, Pete, they were all front runners except for the ones that were.
there's my Eric Wing again.
I don't know where this channeling of the wingman is coming from, but I do enjoy it. We could have had him as a third guest. We could have saved the trouble.
Well, I'm going to be I'll be Eric. I'll play Eric at moments.
All right. So here's the story. With our Friday podcast, we are going to continue to look at the public handicapper races. Right now, we're in the middle of the public handicapper contest that is the winter of our discontent.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't get in at the beginning, that's okay. On public handicapper, you can start at any time, because there are weekly prizes and monthly prizes in addition to the prizes that go for the whole contest. This week, there's 4 races. They're pretty interesting. One thing that's very unusual, they usually are late afternoon mm-hmm. on Saturday, but with the dearth of stakes action this time of the year, the first race, which is the fourth race at Gulfstream on Saturday, starts at 1:35 Eastern. So if you are playing, be aware of the early post time.
Yep.
In this one, we're going 1 mile and 1/16 on the turf. It's a grade 3. Where'd you land in this race?
Well, did you check the weather?
I did not, but I could tell from the amount of MTOs that the weather was in question. I'll look
well,
up to the minute
so
update.
I did. It was a little bit of a... So I checked. There's rain in the forecast today and tomorrow, but it's only about 15% chance today, 30-something percent chance tomorrow, and it appears that more rain is scheduled more in the afternoon and evening tomorrow. So I'm assuming that we will be on the turf, and I'm assuming there's a chance it may be slightly less than fast, but it's not a given that it won't, or sorry, slightly less than firm, but it's not a given that it will be less than firm. So I'm handicapping, assuming that the MTOs will not draw in.
Okay. That's just as well, because if it's off, it's like there's so many scratches, it changes
yeah.
so much, it's not that useful yeah. to people to talk about the day before, right?
Right. But, you know, if you believe the weather, I'm fairly confident in that. The first race, the Marshua's River, the fourth race at Gulfstream, like I said, early post. This one was, I thought, probably the most open of the four. A lot of different ways you could go. I think Sandiva is logical. She's your 9-to-5 morning line favorite. But I don't think she's a slam dunk. She likes the course. She seems logical. My concern with her is if the course does come up a little less than firm, I'm not sure that's her best racing surface. And she's an Irish bred. She came over here, I'm assuming, probably because she prefers a firmer course. And it seems to me like a lot of her efforts have come, or a lot of her best efforts have come on a firm surface. So that's the knock if it comes up a little less than firm. Chad Brown has a couple. Actually, I don't know if you saw my tweet recently about Chad Brown in graded stakes in 2015.
I did not, but I know he won all of the graded stakes turf races in 2015, didn't he?
Sort of.
Was there any he didn't take?
Well, yeah, maybe a couple. but what I was looking at was he had 166 starters in graded stakes races, okay? What I was looking at was, he's got so many horses. How many, do you want to take a guess at how many of those 166 runners ran against another Chad Brown?
I mean, it seems like he never enters fewer than two.
Yeah.
164 is my guess.
Well, no, that's a little, you're a little bold there. 97 of them were competing against one or more of his other horses. He had a few races, at least two in 2015, where he entered four horses.
This is the stock he has, the kind of races he's so good at preparing for. I'm not criticizing when I make these jokes. It's just, it's completely logical. But so did you dig a little deeper? What did you find? Did you find any pattern in those numbers?
19 of 97. So he was only out of the money in five of, it was...
This was any race with multiple starters?
Yes, 39 stakes races where he had multiple starters. He was in the money with one of them at least in 34 of the 39. So, you know, it makes you think that partisan politics and or Hope Cross are certainly legitimate players. I'm thinking the 5-1 morning line on Hope Cross might be a little optimistic. He ran 1-2, I think three or four times. Maybe five times he ran 1-2 when he entered more than one.
That's nice.
So yeah, it's crazy. He actually had a higher win percentage when he entered more than one, when he was competing against himself, than when he entered just one, which is odd because he's kind of betting against himself. So that, all of that said, I think Chad Brown's logical. You'd have to use them in
which one do you prefer?
Hope Cross.
Okay, you prefer Hope Cross.
Hope Cross.
Big trip on Hope Cross last time.
Right.
I'll put a pin because you're still working on this.
I prefer Hope Cross. Okay. I'll channel Mr. Wing again. Getting weight. Got a four pound weight break on the other Chad Brown, and he's got 2 pounds. She's got 2 pounds on the frame. In light. And Joe Bravo was second only to Mr. Florent Giroux in terms of ROI and graded stakes in 2015 as a jockey. He had a 3+ ROI. One other note I'll say, if it does come up less than firm, Quiet Kitten is an interesting long shot. 3 for 5 anytime it comes up less than firm. 4 for 9 at Gulfstream Park. 3 for 5 at the distance. Nice win last out in the Claiming Crown, stepping up, of course, but likes the course, likes the distance. 7 for 17 filly lifetime. If she improves a bit at all, she could be a player at a price.
Speed play, right?
A bit of a speed play, yeah.
All right, you mentioned half the filly.
Okay.
You're going to give us a pick here?
Yes. Divine Aida.
Okay.
Divine Aida, I think, now it has ended up in the Christoph Clement barn, has run well a couple times for Christoph. I think turf is her preferred surface. I think she actually ran a very good race last out, finishing third with very little chance against a loose leader in Isabel Sings. She's, you know, somewhat lightly raced. I think she can move forward and be a big player here and will be a nice price.
Partisan Politics does have her on the form book, just one.
That's true.
One little note. She was one I was looking at, but in the end I settled.
But she did finish ahead of Partisan Politics in the last race.
They've traded decisions.
Yes,
it's true. In the end here, I settled on number 8-2 to Paese.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting, it's actually sort of a fun, geeky, trip handicapper experiment to go back to that December 12th race and watch the trips of both Hope Cross and 2 to Paese and see what you think in terms of who had the worst trip. I think a lot of people are going to focus on the trouble that Hope Cross had. She saved a lot of ground. She definitely, to me, got stuck in a vice coming home in the turn, mm-hmm. just between horses, nowhere to run, and then slightly had to check, eventually did find room and have clear sailing. In the case of 2 to Paese, she was just very, very wide, 36 feet more wide, according to Trackus, than Hope Cross. So for me, the way that I look at the world, the trouble that 2 to Paese had, given that there's something like 8 lengths of ground loss there, is more significant than the little bit of trouble that Hope Cross had, since Hope Cross did have a chance to get back and try to run down. For me, I just prefer 2 to Paese, and I think that, as you pointed out, Mike, the 5-1 might even be optimistic on Hope Cross because of the trainer, because of the obvious trouble, because of the other obvious attributes. I'm thinking Tudor Paese could maybe go off here at a halfway decent price under Chris DiCarlo for Mr. Mott. And I'm going to take a little bit of a shot, I think, in this race with her.
Yeah, and I noted she likes the soft footing. You're right about the price. 7-1 in the last race versus Hope Cross, who was your 5-2 favorite. So, you know, obviously with that trouble. But I understand your point about going wide and that be, but it's a little bit of tomato-tomato because by going wide, it allowed her to have the clear run and it gave her the first run of the race, and she basically got a two-length lead on Hope Cross before Hope Cross got clear. And I'm not going to knock Joe Bravo for doing what he did by staying
inside. No, he was unlucky.
Yeah, but it just, the hole never opened up, and when it did, she ran on. She actually caught up to her just past the wire. They're getting an extra furlong in this race compared to that race. I'm not sure which is the most likely winner. I think your play is the better one because I think you're going to get a better price.
Yeah, it's. I'm not saying I'm definitely right. Like I said, I think it's an interesting thing for folks to go back and look and see. And that is a good point. She couldn't get on terms during the race. She did come level with her on the gallop out at least. And I just 36 people. I think ground loss is one of those things. To me, this was a situation where it matters.
Yeah.
Where ground loss doesn't matter as much to me is if this was a race with a hot pace and a meltdown, right?
Sure.
This was a case where the race flow should have probably favored horses closer to the front end. I think they both ran huge. I think they're really good. Right. I might even throw the two in an exacta here and try to get out that way and maybe mix in a little partisan politics, who I just think is an improver for Chad Brown. All right, that's enough on that race.
All right.
Let's move to race 10 at Gulfstream on Saturday. This is the Fort Lauderdale, mile and a 16th. It's a grade two, and we are once again on the green. We are hoping we're going to stay on the green. Really interesting little race here.
It is.
I'm going to make you start again.
All right. Well, I think the race kind of goes through two horses, which isn't to say that they're the most likely winner, but I think the race dynamic goes through Fredericksburg and Heart to Heart.
I think I know where you're going with this. Yes. Speed.
Yeah.
And I might even throw number 9 into the conversation. Skyfly is another who could maybe decide to dramatically change the pace picture in this race.
Sure, and even War Correspondent, who has some early foot, and certainly Lochte has some early foot.
Right, I mean, Lochte's not going to give up the rail.
With the rail, you know. So the pace is really, really, really going to determine this race, I think.
Well, as usual.
As usual. So the one that would be a little interesting to me at a bit of a price is the Joe Bravo mount, Fredericksburg, who could be very well. I mean, granted,
Fredericksburg has no chance. It's going to get cooked by all those other horses
maybe,
you just mentioned.
But how many times have we said, okay, on paper, speed, 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 and then it doesn't play out that way because they say, okay, Fredericksburg is a long shot. Let's let him go. Let's sit. You know,
I get where you're going with that, but given that we're dealing with Heart to Heart, he is
getting 6 pounds from Heart to Heart, 6 pounds from
Heart. Given that we're talking about Heart to Heart here, Heart to Heart's rating experiments have not gone well.
Right.
Somebody might take a look back at that May race in the Red Bank and say, oh, look, they rated there successfully, you know, somewhat. No, there was unnoted trouble in that race where he walked out of the gate and had to catch up.
He was by far the best in that race.
Absolutely. Yeah. But also, just it's not like the horse settled nicely.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the infamous poker where, for some bizarre reason, and I don't know, maybe it was trainer instruction, but it was, then again, he didn't ride the next time, so probably not, where he wrangled back and allowed King Creesa to walk on the lead. I just think they know with this horse. This horse has one way. He has one way to show his best style. And to me, it's going to compromise Fredericksburg. But, I mean, I don't know what joy I'm getting out of throwing cold water on a 20-1 shot that I'm giving out here. But
there you go.
I just think that it's a big ask.
But things can happen. He can walk out of the gate again. I'm not saying he's the most likely winner.
Right.
He is the one that I think provides a little bit of an interesting value this race because some of the more logical ones I have some questions about. I mean, I think Lochte is probably your most likely winner. I mean, look,
I can't argue with that.
He loves the track. He loves the distance. He's 3-for-4 if it comes up less than firm. But especially with the move to Javier Castellano, you're guaranteed a short price there. I mean, he's gonna be short. Your second choice is
three open length, 100 buyer stakes wins. You could put you up.
Yeah.
And you're gonna be the favorite.
Yeah, and so you put the best jockey in North America, regardless of whether or not he wins the Eclipse. He's the best jockey in North America.
Good tease of a conversation we'll have next week. I think unfortunately we're gonna all agree about.
Yeah, I think so. I understand.
We need an Espinosa apologist. Maybe you can pretend to be one.
Frank Scatoni is one.
Really?
Yeah.
I just think that's nuts. But anyway, we'll talk about it next week.
I'll play Frank. I know his case. It's a valid one.
Save it for Eclipse. Yeah. The Eclipse.
But anyway, war correspondent coming off a long layoff was scratched out of the El Prado on December 12th. Worked the next day. It was kind of a slow work. I don't know why he was scratched. It was a trainer call. It wasn't off the turf. It wasn't a vet call. But, you know, this horse has some issues. As a six-year-old who's lightly raced, only raced eight times, coming off a long layoff, I don't want him at a short price. Takeover Target can win, but I don't want him at a short price. He's going to be lower than 5-1, you know. So to me, it comes down to heart-to-heart, Fredericksburg on the front end. If for some reason Fredericksburg, with the weight advantage, gets the first run at him, maybe he stays, maybe he gets brave. Why not? Doesn't win much. I know.
It's ambitious, but it's a good contest horse. You know, okay. It's a good contest horse. I don't know what to do in here. I mean, heart to heart is where I want to go, just figuring, you know, it's a course that should favor the kind of aggressive ride that I think this horse wants to get. I can't knock Lockley. I'm not interested for public handicapper purposes. And heart to heart also for public handicapper purposes might just be too short. Mm-hmm. Got to do a little bit more thinking about this one. I mean, Takeover Target at a price would be excellent.
I think you
hit the nail on the head. There might not be one there, I mean, just because of connections. But I wouldn't be surprised to see these Chad Brown 4-year-olds come out and be just significantly better.
Oh,
just
yeah.
His training methods. I think what you're seeing on the paper with Takeover Target might just be the tip of the iceberg.
I mean, Takeover Target's been, since his debut, where he shocked at 16-1. I mean, wouldn't you love to get a chance at another Chad Brown first-time starter at 16-1 going long on the turf? Even though that was only a little over a year ago, those days are gone. Since that debut, he's been over 5-1 once, and that's when he finished fifth. This horse is always bet. You're not going to get much of a price.
But I mean,
I
have to say, Lochte's going to be shorter than 3-1. Heart to Heart's going to be shorter than 6-1. So I mean, the money has to go somewhere. I mean, yeah, these bombs are going to be longer than the 20s of the morning line. For academic purposes,
but there may or may not be a scratch too. That's the other. I mean, war correspondent seems to scratch out of every race he's entered. So.
True. Lots of layoff lines there. For academic purposes, I'm going to go with Heart to Heart, and we'll have it between us on the front end. If it's speed bias turf at Gulfstream, maybe we'll get a winner.
Run one,
out of
too.
That one.
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's move out west to Southern California. I just remembered something I was going to ask you before the show started. Okay. I'm going to just ask it anyway. We're having a production meeting in the middle of the show here, folks. Bear with us. Do we have any more of those prizes that we gave away last year?
Oh, the California Chrome ones. I don't know. We may. I can dig around.
Well, we can. I can very well announce a contest if we don't know if we have them. But we'll say we may have a little contest on Twitter. That was pretty popular last year. I was amazed at how many entries we got.
Well, presumably he'll also run in Dubai, right?
Well, yeah, but I thought maybe we still had like 5 pictures and we could do both. For folks who don't know what we're talking about, every time California Chrome ran last year, not that there were so many of them, but we did a little contest on the show where, what did we do? If you had to give out the trifecta?
Yeah, something like that. We played around a little bit.
Contest where folks could win a signed photo of California Chrome, signed not by California Chrome himself, but by Victor Espinosa.
Correct.
Who seems like the big front runner to win the Eclipse for Jockey, much to my chagrin.
Does he, though? I don't know.
I just can't stop having this conversation.
I don't know.
I think it's one of those things. But I do this every year. I will say with the Eclipse Awards, well, so-and-so is who I want to win, and here's who I think will win. I was worried about it last year with the actually Horse of the Year. But anyway, we'll talk about that soon. Yeah. And the other thing we will do soon is possibly announce, if we have some of those pictures lying around, maybe we'll send something out on Twitter.
Dig some up. If nothing else, we can save them for Dubai if all things go well.
Let's hope they do. But anyway, that's not even this race. I don't know why I jumped in.
I don't know. Yeah, it's whatever.
This is Sanity's sixth race. It's the Sham. It's the Triple Crown Prep race. It's a grade three. We're going a mile on the main track at Santa Anita. Interesting, interesting race.
Yes. Correct.
And I'll start with this one just to shake things up.
Please do.
I can go a lot of different ways. I'm going to try to make a guess about a horse that might drift past what his morning line is. And I'm going to make a little bit of a case for Found Money for Doug O'Neill. This horse has performed very well at Santa Anita, has run against some really good horses. If you look at the horses who've beaten him, it's sort of a class play, I guess. Because if you look at the horses who've beaten him, you've got some pretty good stakes-winning types. And now he's coming down to here where, yeah, there's some horses with stakes for him, but they're who are unproven on the dirt. I just think this horse could end up being a little bit of value. The Delta Jackpot doesn't bother me at all. That track was kind of a joke in the race that Exaggerator won. It was the ship across country. I'm just drawing a line through that one. The last race was not overly impressive. I totally get that. But I'm just sort of hoping that based on his body of work and where these horses all are now, I don't think he's the best horse in the race. I don't think he's the most likely winner. But I'm hoping maybe we get a chance at a little bit of a price for Found Money and Doug O'Neill at 6-1 in the Sham.
See, it's funny you say that, because for me, he seemed like the horse that was going to take more money from the morning line.
You think so?
Partly because he is the one in the race at a stakes level that has proven dirt form.
That's true. But I was just thinking they're all going to go to Dresden Hermes and the two Baffert horses.
Perhaps. I don't know. I've got some cold water to throw on those.
Well, first of all, what's your
I was thinking similarly to you, but I went with the other horse who I feel like is truly a dirt runner, even though his lone win came on the turf, which is I'm Already There. I think the last race was much better than it looked. I didn't do your work at the Los Al to see if outside was the place to be or not. However, he was, ground loss-wise, stuck wide on the first turn, wide throughout, wide on the second turn.
You're talking about the Futurity?
Yes.
Yeah, that was not a particularly wide day, I don't think.
Yeah, and it seemed like some of the horses on the inside were doing okay, at least in that race. Some of the long shots held on all right. But he looked beat. I thought he might be last in the stretch. He comes up to get a nice third against More Spirit, who we have to agree would be 1-5, 1-2 in this spot.
It's still a lot of lengths, though, to More Spirit.
That's fair. That is fair. But, you know, I saw some bravery there from a horse that ran on that looked like he wasn't even going to hit anywhere close to the super, let alone the top three. You know, ran on well. He could be a little bit of a goofy horse. Maybe he's still kind of putting things together. I don't know. He's the one I liked, but I completely see your point on Found Money. I just thought he might be shorter.
Yeah, I'm Already There. It makes sense to me, especially for like a horse to really key upon in the bottom of your vertical wagers.
Yeah.
Seems like another one, probably likely to me, likely to run third again, but certainly could do better. I like the form to Dresden Hermes. I mean, very close up to Dresden Hermes in the Zuma Beach, and mm-hmm. that one will certainly be mm-hmm. way shorter. At the same time, I don't have anything against Dresden Hermes, and certainly one of the ones I'd use. The pedigree looks like it should be, accommodate dirt. I didn't do a deep pedigree dive, but just doing the obvious, looking at the names of the horses in the first lines of the pedigree, I wouldn't guess dirt would be a problem. I was impressed enough with this horse to consider. I would have really considered as an outsider for the turf, even had it not been such a strong field, and had I not fallen for a couple others in there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the horse I've liked who makes sense. I'm curious to hear your cold water.
Well, actually, I don't have as much cold water on Dresden Hermes as I do on the two Baffert runners.
Okay.
Dresden Hermes, or Hermé. Let's call it Hermé.
Okay.
Hermé, I believe, is the French pronunciation.
I can't afford those handkerchiefs.
That's true, me neither. Actually, I have a very positive trainer stat for Janet Armstrong. She is 4-15 with a $4.01 ROI last 5 years going turf to dirt with all horses. So
okay.
Turf to dirt for her is not so much of a concern. For me, the concern is more when you've got a proven stakes winner and you're trying the dirt, this is a let's see how they fit and maybe we're going to try to move forward on the Derby trail kind of play. Which is fine, and I don't mind that as an owner standpoint.
You kind of have to.
Right, I just don't want a short price.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and that's why I did not really consider putting Dressed in Hermès on top.
But I will talk about the Baffert horses. So Let's Meet in Rio has not stepped on the turf yet, but...
No, that's the other one. Oh, not stepped on the turf. I'm sorry, I thought you said dirt. Keep going.
Yeah, no, let me finish. Not stepped on the turf yet, but I think from a pedigree standpoint, this one is all turf. I don't know if you did the digging.
No.
Turf-wise.
But it makes sense. It's a Judmont family.
On the bottom side, this dam is a half to Kingman.
Okay.
Kingman.
Guineas winner.
Kingman's pretty 7 for 8, turf miler. He was a pretty good little horse. You know, stepping off the maiden win, I've got positive stats for Baffert, but I just don't know about this one. I think the future of this one is turf. Maybe I'm wrong, but I
doesn't have the right trainer for it. And also, it seems to me if Judmont's going to bother sending one to Baffert, they're not going to send one to the turf horse. I mean, if they know what they're doing, they're not.
Maybe.
So that's my fear on that point.
Perhaps.
But I take your point from a pedigree standpoint.
I mean, Flatter doesn't necessarily scream turf, but.
Yeah, I just think you got to figure like why Judmont are going to think like Judmont.
It's also interesting to me that Baffert had run the horse 3 times without adding Lasix, and then bam, after the maiden.
Yeah, I don't like Lasix in the stake. I really don't like the fact that that was a perfect setup, I thought, and that was a good day to be wide at Losail. So if you're giving that horse extra credit for being 4 wide, you're doing the wrong thing.
Right.
I don't think that horse has much shot.
No, me neither. And then the other one, Collected, who ends up your 3-1 morning line favorite, which is a little bit of a head scratcher to me. I don't know.
I get it based on the 83, based on Baffert.
Finishing behind Dressed in Hermès? If you're figuring
you're
both taking to the dirt, why do you get a shorter price on the...
I'm sympathetic to whoever made that line. It's a hard line to make. I mean, you're probably right.
I'm not saying it's an idiotic. It's a head scratch. I was surprised. I'll put it that way.
I can see where that's coming from. For me, though, I mean, when was the last time Baffert had a good dirt horse that started its career with 2 turf races?
Well, right, and this is the pedigree of this one. The dam is a half to. This one doesn't really have. Might have one sibling that wasn't really much. But the dam herself is a half to Woodwind W, who you may remember.
Yeah.
Stakes winner on the turf going long. Also a half to a horse named Deep Sound, who's a Japanese stakes winner going long on the turf and is great Group 3 placed going long on the turf. This is another one, City Zip. It's not Judmont Speedway Stable. I'm not sure who that is, but this one, for me, the future, at least from a pedigree standpoint, I know we have a trainer that's not necessarily inclined.
Yeah, but when he is inclined to start them on turf, right, that agrees with the pedigree. And this is probably a let's see what we've got.
Right.
We don't really
exactly.
Think,
and
blah, blah, blah.
You may remember Baffert Down the Hill was hadn't won in about 5 years down the hill until this one broke his maiden by a nose in the debut down the hill. So to do that, when Baffert doesn't immediately throw, if he immediately throws a horse, not just on turf, but down the hill, and they win.
It's unusual.
It is.
But,
it
I mean,
is.
You could. It's one of those stats, though. That's the thing with stats sometimes. It's like you can argue them either way. Like, you could say, well, the one who broke the sort of hoodoo, like, doesn't that mean they're maybe have some sort of special quality? Or But you could also say, well, it's just so weird. Why is he going to have a graded stakes dirt winner that he started their career that way?
Right.
At the end of the day, I think the horse will take money, and even though it should get a perfect trip, I wouldn't go crazy betting against, but I'm not in support of.
Right.
It's logical, but
this is one if I was going to take. I don't even know if I would play the race, but if I was going to, it would probably be taking a stand at horses I'm not sure about on this surface at short prices.
I'm interested in Rare Candy here a little bit, too. The number one horse for David Hoffman's. That work to back kind of leaps off the page, unlike Baffert.
Yeah.
Hoffman's not a guy like necessarily known for working his horses fast.
Mm-hmm.
So just the fact that he has that bullet, the form, you know, it's okay.
Could move forward in the second start off a little bit of a layoff.
Coming off of 3/4, which you don't love, but, you know, you have that halfway decent dirt effort, 7 lengths to Nyquist.
Blinkers go on. You got to figure the blinkers are on for that work.
That's a good guess. And probably in my gut, somebody's going to probably be better, but really one that I'm going to use for second and third and would be the one that I'd consider along with Found Money to make my top pick on Public Handicapper. Eileen found money, but there's some things to recommend Rare Candy.
Here's my cold water stat for you on this. But using second and third, you might be good. Hoffman's last 5 years has not had a horse win turf to dirt.
Weird.
0 for 35, but 7 seconds and 6/3. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know why his stock has the horses he has. He's a terrific trainer.
Yeah.
And obviously these days doesn't get the horses that he once did. But I'm not, generally speaking, with trainer stats, for me, when I really trust the trainer,
sure,
I worry less about things like that.
Fair enough.
But I do, and like you said, since I'm more interested for second, third, well, anyway, less significant.
When the price is right, I don't let them worry me too much. I think you're going to get more than that 6-1 morning line, for sure. You might even get twice it. You'll probably get close to 10, if not 10.
That would, if
don't
I,
you think?
If I could lock that in,
I mean,
I would probably make my top pick in the race.
Don't you think? Because Let's Meet in Rio 6-1 in the morning. I think that horse has to be a little shorter. I think Found Money might be. I mean, you're getting 6-1 morning line on Found Money and on a horse who has never won on dirt in Rare Candy. It's finished behind two of the other horses in the race as well.
It's so hard to know how people are going to bet, and it's so futile sometimes.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this,
could be wrong.
And you have to put your Public Handicapper picks in early, you're interested in all this conversation. But the really good news is, if you're just betting the race, you can wait and see the tote board. But I think you get a pretty good idea from what we're talking about here, what way we'd go. If you see something dramatic, if one of these horses we're talking that we kind of like, that we're not making our selection, and they end up being much longer than their morning line, I'm not going to claim that we picked them as a winner on the show, but hopefully we can at least help you make some money.
I will say this. If there are no scratches, because, of course, scratches can change the post-time odds, if there are no scratches, I would go all in on the over of the 6-1 for Rare Candy. I would go all in. If someone let me bet.
I just, you made the point that one of them was 7 lengths to More Spirit. This one's 7 lengths to Nyquist, So, I was thinking people might see that. But you're probably right. They're also going to see the fours at the end of the running line.
Yeah.
You've convinced me that the horse is going to be longer than 6-1.
I've been wrong before, so it
I'm not
going to
switch
time.
My pick. I'm not going to switch my pick, but I'll take an extra little look.
Real quick, before we move on, there's something interesting in this race that actually applies to Opportunity in the next race that I hadn't seen before. Both Bob Baffert and Martin Garcia have started the Santa Anita meet with identical 19-1-1-4 records. 19-1-1-4, which is odd.
Are they all riding? Are they
that's what I thought.
Time?
I was like, okay, so is every horse?
Yeah,
but no.
That seems the obvious.
No,
solution.
Only six. There's 6-0-0-2.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So in the other 13 starts, they've come up with the exact same finishes to get the same final.
That's very odd.
Yeah. So that's a regression to the mean. Obviously, Bob Baffert and Martine are not going to be winning 5% or finishing in the exacta 11% of the time for a Santa Anita meet.
That's a little fluke.
It was something I thought was odd.
All right, we got about 5 minutes here to talk about the San Pasquale. It's the big one on the weekend, the return to the races of the Great California Chrome, the star-crossed world traveler.
Yes.
California Chrome. I'm happy to say my trip to England went a lot better than his did.
Hoof issues?
I think we're equally happy to be back. I actually do have a little bit of a hoof issue. But that's neither here nor there. But I've got an appointment later in the day to deal with it, which is part of the reason why I want to try to wrap this in 5 minutes.
You can do it.
But anyway, I don't think there's that much to talk about here. Chrome comes back. He does not exactly catch the weakest field ever. You'd probably like to think they'd have even less competition. Let me just ask you the question of the race. Are you going to try to beat this horse?
I mean, I think if you're playing the race, if you're looking to do a win wager, you have to. He's going to offer no value, and he is vulnerable for a number of reasons. One, the layoff is a concern, even though he's working well. The other thing is, he doesn't need to win this race. This is purely a prep, and it's purely a prep to get him started in his 5-year-old campaign and move on to Dubai later and bigger things down the road. So can he win even if he doesn't run his best effort? Absolutely. But I wouldn't be betting on it at a short price. That said, if you're playing multi-race wagers, especially if you're using longer shots in any of the other legs, you've got to use him. I mean, he's your most likely winner, most likely.
And you've got to figure, another thing they figured out about this horse is just ride him aggressively. It should suit the style.
I think the race sets up well for him. He'll probably be sitting third behind
behind Mystery Train and Alpha Bird, and he'll get the first run on the deeper closers. And
wouldn't even be surprised to see him. Yeah, I mean, well, I suppose second. Alpha Bird will make the front. Hey, who was it on the DRF Players Pod who tipped Alpha Bird at some point, and we got into the last time I knocked somebody tipping a 20-1 shot, which I did earlier in the show today, was when one of you guys picked Alpha Bird in the.
Yeah,
I think
it probably was me.
it just made me laugh to see him.
It probably him was me.
But you're off the Alpha Bird bandwagon.
Look, if he runs his career best effort as a 5-year-old, he's lightly raced. He'll get the lead. He'll cut the corner. But I just don't know if he's good enough to hold on. You'll get a nice price, and he's supposedly been working well. But I just don't know how much I can rely on him.
And, yeah, we don't need to spend any more time talking about Alpha Bird, honestly. Who is your pick in the race, or are you sort of picking California Chrome and saying it's a no-bet race?
Well, no, I would even pick against him. I mean, I think Opportunity is logical, but I think he's vulnerable. I mean, the horse just rarely wins.
And I just think it's too short. For me, he's just such a grinder. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to... Yeah, he could get a setup. I'm not saying he's impossible, but, boy, at the price he's going to be, going shorter than he wants against a couple horses who I think just might be primed for bigger efforts, I'm against in the top spot. I mean,
yep.
It's certainly going to run second.
Me too.
Won this race last year. It's not crazy to suggest he's going to win. He's just not for me.
He's becoming an underneath key at this point.
Yeah.
You know, a fantastic underneath key. But he still could win. I went with Imperative. I think Imperative he's kind of probably the wise guy horse if you're not looking at one of the top two. But he's run pretty well, at least... Not run. He's run some of his better efforts recently since moving to the Richard Baltus barn. Baltus has been on fire, not just at the Santa Anita meet, but over the last year or two. Baltus puts him in good hands. Baltus gives a very nice vote of confidence by scratching him out of the allowance race that he's cross-entered in today, where he was the 5-2 favorite. In order to go in the San Pasquale, I actually reached out to Baltus on Twitter, and he confirmed that that was the plan. They're scratching him from the race today. Yes. I don't know what kind of price I'm going to get. He's been working well. He's the one I would lean on as the upsetter.
Well, I hate to do this to you, but I completely agree.
we're in agreement on an 0-for-9 horse at Santa Anita.
Well, but see, I was going to point that out. The 0-for-9, this is another place where stats let you down if you don't look closer. First of all, granted, he ran some big figures for his previous trainer, Papa Pedromo.
He did.
But, absolutely did. You know, Baltus, and as Baltus is going, you could kind of argue you want to start over there. But even if you just go through, now you need the lifetime PPs, one of the things we tipped about, special aspects of Formulator that are so good. You can not just look at a horse's last 12 runs, you can look at all their runs. And you look at some of the horses this horse ran against that created this 0-for-9 at Santa Anita. You're going to see the name Shared Belief a couple of times. You're going to see a Breeders' Cup Classic in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you're going to see Shared Belief three separate times. Yes, there were days when, you know, that he didn't have so many built-in excuses.
He's going to have to do better. He's going to have to do better than his fifth place finish behind Footbridge.
There you go.
But
I'm just saying, like, the 0-for-9 sounds, sounds really stark and like, oh, he just must not like it there. I wouldn't be too sure. You know, you've also got the fact that the Santa Anita surface only came in after the last BC, right?
Exactly.
So he's really only, 0-for-4 on the current Santa Anita surface against Sheer Belief three times in a Breeders' Cup Classic? Come on. This horse has a chance beyond what that suggests. Looking back, I mean, I thought he was a big flow move up in the Awesome again. The pace there was a joke with the desiccated remains of Byron setting the pace and Smooth Roller getting the perfect trip. Yes, he was second to Dortmund last time. Dortmund seems to be a much improved horse and a potential leader of the division.
Yes.
I don't think there's a whole lot of shame in that one. I think he makes a lot of sense for all the reasons you said. So we'll see if we can get Imperative home for us, and if not, let's hope that Chrome wins and it's just a nice feel good story for everybody involved.
My approach is I'm either passing the race or playing against Chrome, and either way, if Chrome wins, I'll be applauding him as a fan.
Excellent.
I hope he runs a huge race and sets himself up as a huge player.
Be great
in the division.
Could be a fantastic thing for the year. One other just little side point. I will point out that Point Piper was actually closer to Dortmund than our friend Imperative was from just a strict form handicapping angle.
That's true.
But I think that's, you know, Dortmund taking a big step forward.
That's true.
As opposed to anything too meaningful. But it does make me think of sticking Point Piper in some second and third combinations.
And that was the Dortmund's first race off of that layoff.
Exactly. He was probably presumably short.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that makes me like him more, obviously, but I'm just saying maybe Point Piper is an underneath sneaky one.
Speaking of Point Piper and pedigree, do you recognize who Point Piper, the dam of Point Piper is Imagine?
Which one was Imagine?
Oh, boy. She was the dam. So this one's a half to some really big turf horses in Europe. And, of course, I didn't.
It escapes you.
I didn't write it down. I actually noted it because when Hollendorfer got this horse, he immediately threw the horse onto turf and didn't do much, and then he went back to the dirt. But yeah, the pedigree is all turf there.
Interesting. All right, well, there you have it. That's the show for this day, which is what, January 8th?
January 8th,
2016 edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. Thank you all so much for listening, joining us, watching on YouTube. Look for us on Twitter at DRF Formulator. He's apparently on Twitter every 2 seconds. I'm not far behind over at Looms Boldly. Until the next time, may you win all your photos.